doesn't allow concealed carry of firearms. Supporters of the movement are hopeful lawmakers in Springfield will eventually approve such a law. In the meantime, Illinois residents wanting a permit can still apply for one, but there's a catch. Mike Moen has more.
On a Friday evening at a Holiday Inn near Rockford, Shane Conway stands in front of a table in a small conference room. He's going over some paperwork with participants of a class he's about to teach.
This is terms and conditions for the class, so you can read that if you want. And this is just your information and then how you paid for the class.
Conway is a chief instructor with Equip to Conceal. This class is a requirement for someone wanting to apply for a concealed carry permit issued by the state of Utah. If you're asking what this has to do with Illinois, residents across the country can apply for Utah's permit, which is good in more than 30 states. Of course, it can't be used in Illinois, but it allows Illinois residents to carry a concealed firearm when they travel to various states. Conway, who is certified by the state of Utah, also teaches classes in Wisconsin, which recently enacted a concealed carry law. He says turnout at these classes can vary.
You know, it depends on the day. It depends, you know, on a Sunday, not many people are going to show up because of football games are on. But Saturdays, a lot of times, is a pretty good turnout.
On this evening, the turnout is pretty low. 5 people registered, but only 3 showed up. 2 of the participants are Eric and Emily Asplund of Rockton. Emily says she and her husband are hunting enthusiasts who travel to Montana a lot.
With the society today, you know, just like they say, you know, if there's an opportunity for us to protect ourselves, we're going to take full advantage of that.
Eric Asplund says having the Utah permit is really about feeling the need for personal protection on the way to Montana.
Traveling is the worst part about not having any weapons with you. Rest areas are always not a safe place.
And while the turnout might be low at the class the Asplunds are attending, others say demand is out there in Illinois for the Utah permit. Those shots you hear are being fired in a shooting range operated by Gat Guns in East Dundee. The store offers the class for the Utah permit and one for Florida's concealed carry permit, which also covers many states. Vice President Greg Trepino Jr. says these classes are by far their most popular.
Even if it's introductory pistol courses, even if it's more advanced holster draw, it doesn't seem to matter what it is. You know, we've gotten the most overall volume from inception to now for the concealed carry classes.
Trepino says he was at first reluctant to offer the classes, figuring they wouldn't attract a lot of people. But he says it didn't take too long to figure out there was a market.
First class wound up getting 10 people in, then the next class was 30, and then all the classes after that started getting, 50, 60, even 70 people per class.
Trepino says there are cases of people wanting the permit for travel purposes, but he suspects most of the time, individuals who apply don't even utilize the permits. He says they just want something they can't get through their own state government.
A lot of it's just to satisfy their own personal desire to have it to some form, or at least have the capability of having it.
Downstate lawmakers have tried several times to get a concealed carry law passed in Illinois. Previous efforts have been blocked by Chicago Democrats, who feel that concealed carry would lead to more violence. While he supports the practice, Trepino says he thinks the movement has reached its peak in terms of momentum, at least for now. However, applicants like Eric Asplund hope the demand for out-of-state permits will capture the attention of policymakers.
I think this helps push the state along to maybe legalize it in Illinois.
A key lawmaker behind the concealed carry movement says right now there are no such plans to introduce a measure during the fall veto session. He says they're awaiting a decision in a lawsuit against the state. In the meantime, a permit from elsewhere in the country will have to do for concealed carry backers in Illinois.
I'm Mike Moen.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says the evidence is clear the Earth's climate is changing. Global temperatures could rise to levels not seen for at least 2 million years. Rich Egger talked to an expert about the potential impact of this.
Earth's average temperature is expected to rise 2 to 11 degrees during the next 100 years. Dr. Eric Grimm of the Illinois State Museum has studied the climate and spoke about it recently at Dixon Mounds Museum. He says you cannot ascribe a single storm, such as Hurricane Sandy, to climate change.
But what you can say is that the frequency of such storms has increased, the power of such storms has increased. I mean, here we had a 1,000-mile-wide storm in November. And so there's, you know, the probability is that, yes, that can be ascribed to global climate change.
Why do you think it's taken so long, I guess, for the public to come around on this? You pointed to a statistic that 68% of Americans now see climate change as a serious problem. It's taken a while to get a majority of Americans to see things this way.
The events of this last couple of years, with the tremendous droughts in the southern plains last year, tremendous drought this year in the Corn Belt, Illinois, Midwest this year, has focused people's attention on it. I think the hurricane, of course, focused people's attention on it. And by the way, sea level rise is already becoming a concern along the East Coast. And in fact, some places, sea level rise doesn't rise the same speed everywhere because you've got land going up and down due to geological forces. And it's particularly bad south of New York. And so they're already seeing, you know, increased sea level rise there. And like I said, it's increased 8 inches during the 20th century. And so that's enhancing. So even if Storm Sandy were the same intensity of a storm 50 years ago, its effect is going to be greater because of the sea level rise.
You mentioned that greenhouse gases increase temperatures, and increased temperatures lead to more greenhouse gases. It's kind of a vicious cycle, isn't it?
It's a vicious cycle, or what we call positive feedback. And the one I discussed in my talk, because it's the easiest to explain, but it has to do with the melting of the Arctic permafrost, which stores huge amounts of carbon. And when that melts, it decomposes first in the methane and then in the carbon dioxide. So as the Arctic is warming, and we're seeing the greatest warming globally is in the Arctic, and as we're seeing, as the Arctic is warming, the permafrost is melting, and that is releasing methane and carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So it's a vicious cycle, positive feedback, yes.
And you mentioned there's a possibility, or at least a concern, a worry, that perhaps you could have some huge methane burp, I guess, for lack of a better description?
Yeah, that's something that's just starting to be looked at right now. There's something called clathrates, which are methane compounds that are stored in the Arctic shelf. And most of the clathrates in the ocean are kept in that form by pressure, ocean pressure. And, of course, rising sea level will increase that pressure and make it less likely. But in the Arctic, they're at shallow depths, and increasing temperature of the Arctic Ocean, enhanced by the melting of the Arctic ice cap, Arctic sea ice, could potentially cause the methane to be released from these clathrates. And there's a huge amount of methane involved there. And so this is something, as I said, this is something we don't know. Is this a danger right yet? It's just really people have just sort of started to focus on it recently and started to do research on it. But it's something that we need to really keep our eye on and consider.
What would happen if there was a huge release of methane all at once?
Well, when it's happened in the past, there have been, tremendous global warming incidents with extinction of species around the world and so on.
Well, would if you could advise the president regarding climate change and maybe some changes that need to be made, are there one or two things you would tell him?
A lot more research investment into alternative energy, first and foremost, I think. And that includes wind, that includes solar. It may be things like tidal. There are other things out there, you know. I also think that we probably need to look at nuclear as a short-term solution, and maybe more investment in fusion energy. That always seems to be 50 years in the future, but what would it be if we had a Manhattan Project for it? You know, I don't know. So we need to do that. Other short-term, I mean, there are the things that are happening, which I think are, in spite of what any politician is doing or not doing, is that we're seeing a shift to natural gas production, and I think some of these coal jobs are being lost because of the shift to natural gas. Now, natural gas is a fossil fuel, but it doesn't produce as much carbon dioxide per BTU of power. So it is a cleaner fuel in that sense.
Dr. Eric Grimm of the Illinois State Museum says Western Europe and the U.S. are beginning to reduce fossil fuel consumption, but China and India continue to build new coal power plants and emit more greenhouse gases. Rich Egger reporting.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 19th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Sharon Olds, born in San Francisco, 1942. The jazz trombonist Tommy Dorsey, born in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania, 1905. the poet Alan Tate, born Winchester, Kentucky, 1899. He was working at a True Stories magazine as a copy editor, got fired, rented a farmhouse upstate New York, and wrote his best-known poem, Ode to the Confederate Dead. And it was on this day, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln got up in front of about 15,000 people at the new National Cemetery in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and delivered his address. It was a foggy, cold morning. Lincoln got there about 10 o'clock. Around noon, the sun came out, crowds gathering on a hill, military band played. The headline orator, Edward Everett, spoke for more than 2 hours, describing the Battle of Gettysburg in great detail. And when he was finished, Lincoln got up, pulled his speech from his coat pocket, and read it. It was about 10 sentences, about 272 words, didn't mention the war or the battle, didn't mention the North or the South or slavery, simply said that the nation was founded on the idea that all men are created equal and that we must fight for that principle in honor of those who have died fighting for it. The audience was distracted by a photographer who was setting up his camera, and by the time Lincoln finished and sat down, a lot of people didn't even realize he had spoken. But the speech was reprinted in newspapers around the country. Everett's speech in print was wordy and pretentious. Lincoln's was elegant and concise, and that's the one that we remember. Here's a poem for today by Louise Erdrich, entitled Advice to Myself. Leave the dishes, let the celery rot in the bottom drawer of the refrigerator, and an earthen scum harden on the kitchen floor. Leave the black crumbs in the bottom of the toaster. Throw the cracked bowl out and don't patch the cup. Don't patch anything. Don't mend. Buy safety pins. Don't even sew on a button. Let the wind have its way, then the earth it invades as dust, and then the dead foaming up in gray rolls underneath the couch. Talk to them. Tell them they are welcome. Don't keep all the pieces of the puzzles or the doll's tiny shoes in pairs. Don't worry who uses whose toothbrush or if anything matches at all, except one word to another or a thought. Pursue the authentic. Decide first what is authentic, then go after it with all your heart. Your heart, that place you don't even think of cleaning out.